Welcome to Vice and Easy, your podcast for all things Miami Vice, with your host, Marina.
Hello, and welcome back to Vice and Easy. This week, we have a lot of media. I think I have something like 30 audio clips. I think I had 67 pictures and 14 GIFs. So, just a reminder, follow along with each and every episode of Vice and Easy with our gallery. So go to the description page for each episode and you'll see its corresponding gallery link, because this episode has some looks. I love the cinematography. I love the staging. The director is Bill Duke, by the way. I looked this up. This man is still working. He is older than my father. He is over 80 years old. And I really love this. This is kind of like a throwback. I don't want to say to season 3, but it's just grittier, and I like that a lot. Let's get into it. This week, we are covering season 4, episode 14, Baseballs of Death. Per IMDb, the synopsis is a little wonky. Sorry, anonymous user who has posted that on IMDb. Well, it has your email here. I'm not going to throw you under the bus. Crockett and Tubbs are investigating the murders of prostitutes, which appears to be the work of a sadist. They discover that the killer is a Chilean police official. They try to arrest him, but someone from the government gets him out. It's obvious that the government man and the Chilean have something going on, so they try to find out what it is. We open on one of the best cold opens that I've seen in Miami Vice so far. I think I'm going to start compiling lists, like maybe to have like kind of just like a fun episode of like the best of, because this one really hooked me in. Not only are we in kind of like the red light district, but not really, because there's a Radio Shack with a bunch of working girls, a bunch of hustlers, guys selling chains, guy with a giant boombox. You got some business people, you got some families horrified at what's going on. And we, the audience, have Pump Up the Volume playing in the background. As this beautiful woman is working her way down the street, again, with this electric blue stockings, her strapless dress, her, it looks like a baby blue, like very, very sky blue, like very light blue, great bone structure, and she has dangling heart earrings with white lace gloves, looking like a million bucks. We see her as she's walking down the street, you know, by the Radio Shack where it's popping. That's just working the street by the Radio Shack. We see her at like a conglomerate of all these faces, one of whom I put on the gallery. I'm like, is that Michael Imperioli from The Sopranos? Like Christopher? She gets into a car as she looks up at the person we've been seeing the whole cold open taking pictures from a nearby apartment. After her session with her John, she comes back frustrated that she's only made $300. He doesn't really seem to care because, quote, it was a good night for him. He wrote down the license plate of the car that picked her up in front of Radio Shack and concocts a very shady way to get this information. So he has access to the DMV computer. He sees that this car, this Maserati, is registered to a rental agency. So he calls the rental agency, lies about this car hitting him in a parking lot to get the info, which should never happen. But again, this is TV. So he gets the information, gets the address, gets the number, calls this guy and blackmails him. As this poor girl, as our poor girl Cinder, and it's so I just want to keep calling her Lisa Marie, because when I say Cinder, I think of that big fat gray cat that was a meme a few years ago when the cat has to walk on the treadmill in the water to help reduce the stress on her joints. She's just meowing the whole way with like one paw touching the treadmill. That's exactly what I think of. But yeah, she complains about this John being a real creep and kind of like roughing up her neck, asks him to rub it, and he just shoves her, like, gently, but still just shoves her off while he's trying to blackmail this guy, because that is his MO. Now, he gets a hold of him, mentions, again, does the whole spiel, your photo's going to be in the paper, with a very thick British accent. Yes, that is Michael DeBar. As, again, already mentioned in Vice and Easy, it is a very small, incestuous little world. Him and Don Johnson, both involved with Pamela DeBar, naturally. So it's nice that they're still friends. This is the second time he's appeared on Miami Vice. Now, let's get to this blackmail attempt. The gentleman that he's blackmailing, Ernesto Guerrero, this is how I can't.
You know, you Latino businessmen are my best customers. In fact, when you get down to Miami, the first thing you want to do is get your oil changed.
Now, our Ernesto looks a little dorky with the glasses, but you can tell right off the bat you do not want to mess with him. I also want to mention cinematography. I took a million gifs of this episode for a good reason. While Ernesto is pulling up to the alley, it's smoky, like actively steamy and smoky. He gets out of the car and he has his handkerchief over his nose as the staircase comes down to go up the stairs to the fire escape. So cool. I'm sorry, I'm really going to be gushing about that all this episode. Let's get back to see how that blackmail went. Now, Mr. Guerrero, Latino businessman, just wanted to get his oil changed. He is a smart man. When our British friend Michael DeBar pulls out the film that he has that implicates Ernesto Guerrero in soliciting, he just, without a word, pulls out a lighter, sets it on fire for Michael DeBar and Cinder, Lisa Marie, can really say anything. One of his goons,
hired goons,
pulls out a gun with a silencer. This is when Michael takes off his glasses. They're both illuminated really well in the light. He gets shot as Cinder, nervous, unfortunately aware of her fate. There is some kick-ass synth music playing in this scene. Meets her demise, and with that we end the cold open. When we open back in the daytime, Cinder and Michael DeBar's body, I totally forget what his character's name is, we'll figure it out in a moment because Gina mentions him in this next clip, their bodies are being carried down the stairs in the daytime. And again, Vice is wondering, why are we here? Gina recognizes Cinder, so that she already has prior charges, and then she picked her up last week. Actually, turns out there's a funny story about our rock star guest star, Michael DeBar, in this next clip.
We called DMV and guess what?
Surprise me.
He used to work for him. He was fired for insubordination, refused to cut his hair.
Haha, and then Crockett jokes that he got more than a haircut. Now we go check on their apartment at the Tropical, which is kind of a known seedy motel. Gina and Crockett are inspecting the dark room full of prints of other guys that they've blackmailed through Cinder's work on the streets. Tubbs sees the setup with the camera and with the DMV computer and puts together what's going on. Basically, he would hole up, take pictures of her working the street. She knew exactly where to get the car to pull over to get them in the shot, run their plates with the DMV system, call them and blackmail them. Let's check in with our least favorite John, Ernesto. He is at a meeting. I was trying to kind of figure out what kind of meeting this was. There is a large map of Latin America in the background, and I was trying to look for like a logo. He gives an impassioned speech in Spanish. There is a translator with some very epic and of the time 80s glasses, and they look very thick and heavy, but like the silver, very narrowly hooped, kind of like teardrop earrings with red lips. And he is transfixed, I would say. He keeps focusing. There's a close up again. You can see this on the gallery of just her lips with the red lipstick. Well, we know the guy from the Twisted Sister video or Animal House. We don't know what his name is yet, and there's a reason I'm not going to say it yet. But again, we had seen Ernesto do the speech. She's translating. Then this guy gets up, makes a speech as well. She translates into Spanish. When they sit down, it still seems like Ernesto isn't sold. He's not impressed. And he brings that up.
I just find it impossible to operate in Miami.
I think I can help.
Really? Officially or unofficially?
Don't be ridiculous. There's no way to get you people anything officially.
Anything?
Woody's. A bar in the Hotel de Cap. 1:30 a.m. My associate will find you.
Okay, now let's go check out this bar, shall we? So, Woody's on the beach. If I'd never seen Miami Vice, I would be envisioning something very different than this very neon. I do love the glass block bar. I would love to take it for myself one day when I do open my own bar. Because I love it. Bartender in sunglasses, patrons in sunglasses, like not really dancing. Lots of long trench coats. Oh my God. What's it called? The dusters. And like lots of oversized blazers. They go over. Ernesto and his driver. The driver goes to a beautiful woman sitting by herself at a table in a gold dress, gold necklace, gold earrings with red lipstick, gold watch. She looks like a million bucks and she's a strawberry blonde. She looks so familiar, but I cannot place her. And he goes over. She kind of waves the driver off, says that she's waiting for a friend. He basically points to Ernesto and says, like, this is the guy you've been waiting for. This is how she responds.
I wouldn't touch him for $1,000.
Maybe I'm touching 5 times now.
I had to cut it short because of the music. That's Gene Loves Jezebel playing in the background. But basically, there's like kind of an exchange with the money. I like how he says 5 times that amount for $1,000. So it would be $5,000, but those are $100 bills. Again, I was trying to get a GIF or a clip of it. Couldn't really tell it out. But like on a big screen TV, you could tell that those are, you know, movie set 100s, not 1,000s. And she just like storms off, like chair hits the floor, gets up. Again, looks amazing in this dress. She has a lot of like Shiv Roy energy with that face, like very beautiful cherubic face, but then with that attitude. Then as that commotion kind of gets everybody's attention, the associate that was supposed to meet with Ernesto gets a message to him via the bartender in sunglasses that tells him what he's looking for is at 7211 Ocean View. There he's going to meet notorious gunrunner Styles, Oliver Platt.
Captain Guerrera. Glad to see we're off to such a positive start.
I don't trust my mother. Why should I trust you?
Your mother can't satisfy your needs anymore. I can.
Ernesto Guerrero? Okay, just pointing that out. Then as he's kind of going over with Styles with everything he wants, it's a very big list, totaling approximately $3.4 million, leading Platt to respond like this.
1,000 Detonic long slides, recoil compensators, fixed combat sights, 20-round magazines, 300 Mossberg 870s, 50 AR-15s.
This for your gun club? Or are you planning to invade Uruguay?
Then after, sorry, I keep calling him Platt because I know him as Oliver Platt. You know what I've been meaning to rewatch that I put on my YouTube TV, like just to, I put it on, add it to the list and it just records whenever it comes up. The Three Musketeers, because I used to have it on DVD because it was Kiefer Sutherland and Charlie Sheen. That should be a rewatch. Maybe I'll do that this weekend. So as he's tallying up everything, there's one more item that even Styles doesn't think he can provide for Guerrero.
It's just one more item.
What's that?
Baseballs.
No way. Too tough an item.
I'll pay top dollar.
Uh-uh. I can't afford the attention. It'll shut me down.
You can't afford not to.
I'll shut you down right now.
A little bit of foreshadowing here. So Styles, this notorious gunrunner, I don't see him having any goons or anyone to watch over him while he makes these deals. Let's keep that aside. Trudy, looking amazing in blue at her desk, and she has like two little zippers on this. It kind of looks like sexy overalls. You really have to go to the gallery and check it out. But I got a great shot of her on the phone in this blue dress with the big booty Trudy sign right in full view. She calls Croc and Tubbs to let them know that all the other Johns that they had license plates for via Michael DeBarge's photos, they all have alibis. There was a good one earlier in the episode. I don't know why I didn't make a clip of it where Crockett calls with these and go, I'm so sorry, father. So they know that this is their guy. They pull up to the address that they have for the rented Maserati. When they get there, no dice. They can't get in. It is the Chilean consulate. Again, I've said this before in previous episodes. I do not want to be a broken wheel. Embassies may look that nice, but consulates, again, I've only been to the consulates that I belong to. The Canadian consulate here in Los Angeles is a very nondescript room in a tower in downtown Los Angeles. The American consulate in Toronto is a very boxy, unwelcoming building on University Avenue. Like, neither of them are this palatial or lush with guards and fountains and all that. Like, this is definitely a private residence. Use a consulate. They've done this before. I know, I'm getting off my soapbox. So Zwitek, Crockett, and Tubbs, they're going to be up all night. They're just going to try to wait and catch him. Zwitek updates them on what he's been up to and what he's been able to surveil.
Since last night?
A couple of dogs fell in love and started a family about 6 hours ago.
Well, now that it's the daytime and dogs are falling in love, Guerrero pulls out of the consulate and then Crockett and Tubbs pull him over and start the arrest process.
Up against the car and spread them fingers. Now, what is the meaning of this violation?
You see, somebody threw a double murder the other night. Rumor has it that you were the host. General Ernesto Guerrero. Policia de Nacionale, Santiago, Chile. Well, let me tell you something, Ernie. Down there in Chile, this might give you a license to kill. Here in Miami, it don't mean squat. Don't expect any diplomatic immunity up here, because you ain't got none. Visiting police officers in this country are considered private citizens. Now tell me something, Ernie. Where were you 3 nights ago?
This was my country. You would be dead by now.
Yeah, well, we got a little legal technicality up here called the Sixth Amendment. It keeps us from shooting dogs like you when we arrest you. Rico, read him the card.
Cut him loose.
The hell are you?
Brody, DEA. This man is a guest of the Justice Department. My apologies, General Guerrero. You're free to go.
Not until this peasant picks up my gun.
A cold day in July, pal.
And this is when Brody comes in to save Guerrero, says to Vice that he's off limits, that the DEA is working with him because he's helping to take down the Andean cartel. Interesting. Now, back at OCB, they get a little bit more into detail as to why this might be.
Because the wind down in Chile has been blowing from the far right since 73.
So?
DC's not going to upset the rabid anti-communist.
To the point of covering up for a murder?
They may not have to. We can't come up with a stronger case against Guerrero. He walks.
Now, Zwitek actually makes a very good point. Because of the car phone, and he's reading over the rental agreement, they can actually listen in on his conversation on his car phone because the frequencies are akin to radio. So it's not a full tap that would require a warrant. Very interesting. And I want to get into this next scene and not laugh, but I definitely 100% will. Now, Guerrero has been bringing looks this entire episode, as you can tell by his tie when he's getting arrested, the glasses with like the thick silver rims and the black frame, the black lenses. I recently saw Street Fighter on the big screen, so very different from watching at home. And I was howling with laughter the entire time. It is so funny, and it's something you don't appreciate as a kid because you're like, this is not a great movie. This isn't Street Fighter. As an adult, I laughed my ass off, and mostly because of Raul Julia, rest in peace, his final film role, and he killed it. I want to, it's not a hot take, but like he should have been awarded something posthumously because his performance, his outfits, the set design, all of this, top notch. And I was on Reddit like a couple weeks ago and a picture of Pinochet popped up in his garb and he looks just like Bison. And it just dawned to me. I was like, oh, that's where the inspiration comes from. And then when you watch the movie, you're like, oh, this is it. So let me preface the scene. I do not want to laugh at such an evil man who left so much bloodshed in his wake, but you have to see the picture of the portrait hanging in the room at the first pan to when Guerrero's on the phone. It's good. It's good. As you know by the cover art, that the robe that Guerrero's wearing, the silk red and blue, I was like, you need to be holding a very ornate cigarette holder and make this phone call because I had to stop the episode. I was laughing so hard at what a look this was. And I was going back and forth. I'm like, should I make it the cover art? And I was like, this needs to be preserved. And I was able to find a picture of Pinochet in his garb that does look very much like Bison from Street Fighter. There was another photo, but it was like in the funny section of Reddit. And I'm like, yes, I understand. But like, I would kind of feel like a little icky. I am making light of it. Okay, I guess. But this just reminds me, there's a scene of Bison and he's trying to seduce Chun-Li in his room. And he's wearing this like super silky, luxurious kind of like smoking jacket with red slippers. And I can't. Did I even take any notes of this conversation? Oh my God. Yes, I did. Okay. So it turns out that Guerrero was talking to Brody, the DEA agent. And turns out that this is when the DEA agent, who's already gone a little bit dirty, doesn't want to get any dirtier, you know, or risk his pension, God forbid. But let's see how those ethics hand up later on this episode.
Do I sound worried?
You should be. Your gold star didn't cut any ice up here.
I will leave when your associate delivers. It's a delivery that I assume will profit you as well.
I'm only in this for the finder's fee. $10,000 isn't enough for me to risk my pension.
Fine. We'll make it 20. Does that calm your nerves?
DEA brought you here, but I'm your handler. Anything embarrassing happens, it's my butt that gets barbecued, mister. So while you're in Miami, do me a favor. Leash the libido.
I, for one, am very sad that we don't get to see that outfit more in this episode. But speaking of Guerrero, Vice is trailing him. Gina is driving while Crockett and Zwietek are in the back listening in on the car phone. Again, it's really bad connection. Trudy is going through and running Stiles through the computer to see what she can find. Then Castillo calls Crockett and Tubbs to let them know that there's a body with a confession. They can already sense that it's BS, but they go check it out. They see this confession note from Guerrero's driver that looks really weirdly written, just so you can see in the photo. And then Mother of God, forgive me in Spanish is like very boldly written at the bottom.
De Dios, perdóname. It says, Mother of God, forgive me. I'm sorry for taking the lives of the young prostitute and her boyfriend.
Now brace yourselves. I know how convincing that note sounded. Let's hear Brody's reasoning.
Ramon always drives Guerrero's car. You've got blackmail pictures of the dead hooker getting into it. Tonight, he not only confesses, but he kills himself using the same gun.
And I guess Guerrero was home making chili rellenos through all this.
As a matter of fact, he was in his quarters at the consulate. I have notarized statements from the staff swearing to his presence during both incidences. Look, it was obviously Ramon in the car. Guerrero never drives himself. And there was only one man in the car in the pictures. Case closed.
Wait a minute. We got proof that says...
Give it up, Switek. We're just going to have to swallow hard on this one. Agent Brody has the evidence. We don't. Far be it for us to question the wisdom of the DEA.
What a sick burn from Crockett to finish that. Love it. And the end of the scene ends with Brody standing, looking a little pensive, and the lights of the cop car are just caught at this super cool angle. Definitely go check it out. As you can see, like, the neon green of the apartment behind it. Then Brody's on the phone. Again, great shot of him. Profile shot with the glass block window in the background. But let's get to the big reveal. Crockett and Tubbs, another great overhead shot of them at OCB listening into this recording on the car phone. And again, it's not great quality, but... unfortunately, Crockett can make something out that is really worrisome.
2 weeks after that, you're on your own. And the CBUs?
CBU.
Canisterized bomblet units. Cluster bombs. In country, the VC call them bombies. We call them baseballs of death.
Well, so after this revelation, once again, we are back in the precinct. Castillo is explaining the history of the fraught relations and the arms embargo, and Chile's basically circumventing the arms embargo by producing their own, exporting to different countries like Iran and Iraq. Castillo puts Crockett and Tubbs in touch with an expert, unfortunately, firsthand expert, at what these CBUs are capable of.
I mean, the sleeper version of that is what bought me this chair.
A sleeper?
Yeah, it's a new improved version. It lays dormant in the ground until stepped on. There's nothing like hearing that click and knowing that your next step is gonna be your last.
So, these guys don't know the difference between soldiers and non-combatants, is that what you're telling me?
Exactly. Strictly anti-personnel. They've been outlawed in 20 countries. And many of their victims are children.
My jaw also dropped in the scene as the expert tosses a CBU to Tubbs. And you can see in the GIF I made of Tubbs looking absolutely terrified. And then at the end of the conversation, Crockett throws it back to him. And at first in my notes, I was like, oh my God, did Crockett just throw this CBU at this guy who was maimed by one? And then I was like, oh, okay, he did it to Tubbs first. I was like, geez.
I'm having a problem with something. How come if Chile is the biggest exporter of these guys, how come Guerrero wants a U.S. model?
Chile doesn't have the sleeper version. Very difficult to manufacture. And Guerrero knows this is the hot ticket in the Middle East.
After their conversation, Trudy is still running. She wants to get this 904 area code number. So that's going to be like Jacksonville metro area. And when she finally gets it, she calls. This guy answers. It's a weapons manufacturing. It's the biggest weapons manufacturer in the South. Crockett knows as soon as he hears the name. As Stiles, another man, break into a warehouse to get these CBUs, an alarm goes off and we see all these soldiers start to run around. And I will say this song fits really perfectly, and it's called I Can't Break Away by Big Pig. Now, this song continues to play as we change from day to night. So Stiles has already obtained the CBUs as a great shot of him parked, Guerrero driving up, and they get out to make their exchange. Stiles has the briefcase of CBUs on the hood of his truck. like I mentioned earlier, I don't see any backup for Stiles. Again, this is supposed to be a very wanted arms dealer. Surprise, surprise. Guerrero just shoots him in the back, lets him die. And I will say for Oliver Platt, this must have been so uncomfortable to film. You have to see the way his body dead is contorted. It's like his elbows up on the hood of the car and his knees bent and he's hunched over. I'm like, oh my God, I hope they only did a few takes of that because that looks very painful. So now the CBUs are in the hands of Guerrero. So let's check back in with our favorite in Miami Vice, any Fed of any type, because they're usually dirty. Now, they already have all their ducks in a row. Let's see how Brody plays along.
The man is a major U.S. asset in Latin America.
He's a sadistic head case who also happens to be running an off-the-books deal for cluster bombs.
What? What did you say? What the hell is he talking about?
How convincing. Are you surprised that Crockett and Tubbs and Casillo are not buying? What? What did you say?
Talking about a gun runner by the name of Stiles. Wanted in six countries. Look familiar?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's an ex-ATF agent. Used to work for you when you were with Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. And I don't suppose you've seen him since. Right?
No.
No, of course not. So the phone call he made to you at your home last week must have been a wrong number.
Our man Brody has all this time, resource. He has so much at stake, but he can't think of a way to get ahead of that he used to work with our internationally wanted man, Stiles.
Guerrero helps us out sometimes. He's having some trouble getting some small arms. There's an embargo.
Mm-hmm. So you put him next to Stiles?
Yeah. He helps us take out the garbage sometimes.
Well, your buddy stole a CBU sleeper unit from Eccles. We wouldn't have known about it except for Guerrero's got a horn for hookers. Now, we figure he's going to get out with it sometime today. What's his exit point?
I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
I'm talking about $4,000 or $5,000 CDs placed in your account by an S. Stiles.
It's all legal. We have a warrant.
You can either talk to us or you can talk to the U.S. attorney.
Oh yeah, his tune changes really quick, as you can see in his face in the gallery. Vice wants to know when Guerrero is leaving the country, more importantly, when he's leaving with the CBUs. Then we cut to the port, where we see a seaplane, the same seaplane from the pilot, actually. We see Guerrero get in line. We see Vice not so discreetly scattered around, keeping an eye on Guerrero, as you can see by the picture I have of Zwietek standing in clear view with the radio in his hand, as two other suits, other law enforcement officials, maybe actual unclean DEA agents, I was about to say undirty, go tell the pilot, eh, ixnay. The pilot waves off the guy who's refueling the plane. Guerrero starts to put everything together, pulls out his gun, and starts holding this woman hostage and making her hold the briefcase. This starts to get really tense, and Castillo tries to talk some sense into Guerrero.
I got enough explosives here to take all of us.
You'll go down with it.
I got nothing to lose. You try me.
Yeah, that is a loaded statement, to say the least. We have a really great scene of Tubbs following Guerrero to the plane. And it's a really great standoff, and it's really well directed. It's very suspenseful. You can just see how intent Tubbs is looking, how nervous he is, how scared everybody is, and this poor woman. And Guerrero is just looking cool as a cucumber. He is not scared at all. Even though Tubbs does this for about a minute, gets to the plane, the pilot's not going to be messing with anything. The pilot kicks the stairs back at Tubbs, closes the hatch, and off they go. Tubbs, Castillo, Zwitek, they're all feeling really defeated until...
It's not going to get that far. I didn't get a chance to put any gas in the plane.
Oh, okay. So there we go. Castillo calls Crockett on the scarab and tells him to follow the seaplane. As the seaplane starts to sputter, well, let's play the song first. This is a cool song called Running on the Rocks. So as you could hear by the sputtering, the seaplane does land not too far, so Crockett is not too far behind. But there is a very nice-looking older gentleman just fishing by himself in a nice aquamarine dress shirt. He goes in his boat, starts his boat to go check on the seaplane that has just landed in the middle of the water, naturally concerned. But since no good deed goes unpunished, he gets shot and boat-jacked, and thus begins the boat chase between Crockett and Guerrero. And it's a beautifully shot, really fun boat chase to watch. And I made a lot of GIFs of the boats going by and racing each other. Then the boat goes, I'm trying to figure this out. I believe that it goes over the tarp of a catamaran, a little bit bigger, or like a little tiny dock with boats tied to it. It's a very grainy GIF. This was the quality that they had on the show. Don't at me. So with that jump, he gets air, he gets speed, and he gets headed right into a sandbar. Guerrero, the CBUs, and poor dead man's boat all blow up on the sandbar as Crockett watches from a distance. And that is the end of our episode, Baseballs of Death. Now let's break it down. Naturally, our best dressed man, who else but Guerrero in that blue and very vibrant, like rose pink robe. Oh my God. Best dressed woman. I really love Cinder's outfit in the cold open. I really love all the different colors. I love the different necklaces, the heart earrings. Trudy in a periwinkle blue, almost purple dress at OCB, looking at some paperwork, looking like $1 million. She looks amazing this entire episode, as always. Now, for best accessories, I'm also going to give it to Guerrero with not just the sunglasses, but with his fine taste in ties and tie bars. His ties are very interesting throughout the entire episode, and you can kind of tell like the different moods that he's in. I did love Crockett in that yellow unbuttoned. It looks like it's like a hooked Henley, but when he's basically arresting Guerrero, he looks like $1 million. But however, he did not make best dress. You cannot compete with a man in that kind of a silk robe. Our best accessorized female is going to be the translator at the beginning, who, even with those very stark looking glasses and the teardrop earrings, she is very like beautiful, but kind of intimidating at the same time. Her hair is not super flattering. It's very 80s and like curled and combed back. And then I was also thinking, I was like the bartender at Woody's with the sunglasses, or I guess the hostess, the associate who's working with Styles also should get an honorable mention. Oliver Platt, I loved his outfits, but like it just didn't work for me in this role. But I guess that is the beauty of it, is that it's meant to be funny or off-putting or, you know, subversive. But I love when you just go like full evil and you just get that man in a silk robe. This is also just me being very biased after watching Street Fighter so recently. Now let's get to music. Personally, I loved all the songs in this episode because they all worked in their own ways. I really love that Gene Loves Jezebel track 20 kilohertz when they're at Woody's. I think I really want to give it to I Can't Break Away when Styles goes in to get the CBUs, just because of like how thematic and on point it was. And it's very, very, very catchy. Pump Up the Volume in the beginning, like really sets the tone, especially when you see the guy with the giant boombox. Running on the Rocks at the end, it was a good song to end on, not my favorite. So I think I'm definitely going to give it to I Can't Break Away by Big Pig this episode. Now, before we get to our quotes of the episode, I did promise you a little bit of iced tea. Now, I think I hyped this up a little bit more. It's not super spicy because we've talked about this on the podcast. Lisa Marie, I've mentioned her before because she was Tim Burton's long-term girlfriend before Helena Bonham Carter came around. There was definitely overlap. There was definitely hurt feelings. And there was definitely another homewrecking going on. Again, I also mentioned that she was dating Kenneth Branagh and he was married to Emma Thompson. Just a little pattern I've noticed there. So I'm going to be team Lisa Marie on that one. Could not really find any spicy Vice tea on anyone. Oliver Platt, though, I was looking at his bio and I was like, born in Windsor. Why? He was only there for 3 months and they moved back to the States. His dad was working with the State Department. There is a lot of blue in his family life, a lot of blue links. So definitely well connected, went to boarding school, went to Tufts. Like he definitely had a very privileged life, but he seems like a really nice man overall. Like, so I have nothing but good things to say about him. And our man Guerrero, he looked so familiar, but I couldn't really place him. And I'm like, oh, I recognize him from Ugly Betty. Tony Plana. And he has also been in everything. Go to his IMDb. He has been in a lot. This man works. You will definitely know him from something. Then I cannot remember. I was trying to go back to listen to the podcast when I was editing. Mark Metcalf. I hope I didn't say he was in the We're Not Going to Take It video because I meant I want to rock, because that was the whole thing. It's like, what do you want to do with your life? Like playing the Animal House, playing off that. And I want to rock. And like, that's mostly where I know him from. And that I've also linked in the notes for the episode. So not too much feisty today, but great guest stars, great acting, great direction, great cinematography, great outfits, everything. Now, as we get to quotes, we have a lot of great quotes this episode. Again, top-notch writing this episode. Here are a few of my favorites. Let's count them off. Number one.
You know, you Latino businessmen are my best customers. In fact, when you get down to Miami, the first thing you want to do is get your oil changed.
Well. Now, speaking of Michael DeBarz's character...
We called DMV and guess what?
Surprise me.
He used to work for him. He was fired for insubordination, refused to cut his hair.
I guess he got more than a haircut.
And finally, quote number three.
He's a sadistic head case who also happens to be running an off-the-books deal for cluster bombs.
What? What did you say? What the hell is he talking about?
And naturally, the winner is, with the most convincing delivery ever...
What? What did you say? What the hell is he talking about?
I was thinking of it all episode. I was like, wait, who does Brody in this scene remind me of? And then it clicked.
Anything?
I don't know anything.
What were you doing inside?
Just drinking coffee.
Not gambling?
No. I don't know. What, this is a coffee shop. There's no gambling. I don't know.
And on that high note, thank you all for liking, for subscribing, and for leaving 5-star reviews wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for following me on all things social at Vice and Easy Podcast. And thank you as always for all your kind words and encouragement. Just a programming note, I am traveling in the next couple of weeks, so one or two episodes may be delayed, but I will try to get around it. Hopefully, I will see you next week for Season 4, Episode 15, Indian Wars. Until then.
Hey, man, Miami Vice is number one new show.